Let's read a few verses from 1 Samuel, the first chapter. Now there was a certain man of Ramoth Zophim of Mount Ephraim, and his name was Elkanah, the son of Jehoram, the son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, the son of Zup, an Ephrathite. And he had two wives. The name of the one was Hannah, and the name of the other Peninnah. Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. This man went up out of his city yearly to worship and to sacrifice in the Lord of hosts in Shiloh. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, the priests of the Lord, were there. When the time was that Elkanah offered, he gave to Peninnah his wife and to all of her sons and her daughters portions. But unto Hannah he gave a worthy portion, for he loved Hannah. But the Lord had shut up her womb, and her adversaries also provoked her soul for to make her fret, because the Lord had shut up her womb. And as he did so year by year, when she went up to the house of the Lord, so she provoked her. Therefore she wept and did not eat. Then said Elkanah her husband to her, Hannah, why weepest thou? And why eatest thou not? And why is thy heart grieved? Am I not better to thee than 10 sons? So Hannah rose up after they'd eaten in Shiloh, and after they'd drunk. Now Eli the priest sat upon a seat by the post of the temple of the Lord. And she was in bitterness of soul, and prayed unto the Lord, and wept sore. She vowed a vow, and said, O Lord of hosts, if thou wilt indeed look on the affliction of thine handmaid, and remember me, and not forget thine handmaid, and will give unto thine handmaid a man child, then I will give him unto the Lord all the days of his life, and there shall come no razor upon his head. It came to pass, as she continued praying before the Lord, that Eli marked her mouth. Now Hannah, she spake in her heart, on her lips moved, but her voice was not heard. Therefore Eli thought she had been drunken. And Eli said unto her, How long wilt thou be drunken? Put away thy wine from thee. Hannah answered and said, No, my lord, I am a woman of a sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but have poured out my soul before the Lord. Count not thine handmaid for a daughter of Belial, for out of the abundance of my complaint and grief have I spoken hitherto. Then Eli answered and said, Go in peace, and the God of Israel grant thee thy petition that thou hast asked of him. And she said, Let thine handmaid find grace in thy sight. So the woman went her way and did eat, and her countenance was no more sad. I'm going to stop at that point. Of course, the rest of the verses deal with what we're talking about this evening. Someone has written, Search the long annals of proud Rome and Greece, the tombs of war, the chronicles of peace, ransack the old and modern rolls of fame, to fit the brightest splendor in the name above all names is Mother. Someone has also written that the greatest word is God, the deepest word is soul, the longest word is eternity, the swiftest word is time, the nearest word is now. The darkest word is sin. The meanest word is hypocrisy. The broadest word is truth. The strongest word is right. The tenderest word is love. The sweetest word is home. But the dearest word is mother. George Herbert once wrote that one mother's worth more 100 schoolmasters. When you realize that of all the letters that have been written, measure of influence have been written by mother's hand. All the prayers that have been ever offered as far as what they accomplished, the most powerful prayers, have been uttered by a Christian woman. Kipling wrote, If I were hanged on the highest hill, I know whose love would follow me still. If I were drowned in the deepest sea, I know whose tears would come down to me. If I were damned body and soul, I know whose prayers would make me whole. Mother, O mine, mother, O mine. The word mother appears 290 times in the Bible. Paul said in Ephesians 6, verses 1 and 2, Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and thy mother. I want us to observe for just a few moments of Hannah as an example of motherhood and some of the faults that are found in this chapter itself. In the first place, Hannah was a woman who trusted in God in the midst of corruption and trials. You're familiar with the fact that Hannah and her husband lived in the time of the judges. And at least two times in the book of Judges, Judges 17:6 and 21:5, it says, Every man did that which is right in his own eyes. And yet, my friends, in the midst of this corruption and everyone doing what they wanted to do, disregard for God and His laws, there were a few people that were faithful. Place the book of Ruth in that setting. You'll find that here are some faithful people. Here you find that even though most of God's people are unfaithful, here was a woman and her husband that was faithful to the Lord. She trusted in God. Now just think what they could have argued. I'm not going up there to that tabernacle. Those hypocritical sons, Hophni and Phinehas, the sons of Eli, they're up there, and I'm not going up there to have a part in that. They could have argued that. But they didn't. As I thought about that, I thought today, sometimes you hear even members of the church say, I'm not going up there to that church, all those hypocrites, or those that are not doing what they should be doing. Did you ever stop to think, my friends, when it can truthfully be said, I notice I said truthfully said, there are too many hypocrites in the church, there's something wrong with that church. But everybody's not a hypocrite that's called a hypocrite. Sometimes they're just not doing the things the way that you want them done. And thus they become a hypocrite. But she was a woman who trusted in God in the midst of corruption and trials. Secondly, she was a woman with a good attitude. Peninnah had children. But look at her attitude. Hannah had no children. But look at her attitude. What I'm suggesting is some characteristics that if you're going to be a good mother, and use Hannah's example, that you will have. Trusted in God, had a good attitude. For in the third place, she was a godly woman. She went up to the tabernacle with her husband. She prayed to God. And the second chapter presents, at least the first few verses of that chapter, presents one of the most beautiful prayers found in the Bible. The prayer presented by Hannah after the birth of Samuel. It reminds one of Eunice in the New Testament, and of course she's already spoken about in 2 Timothy 1, verses 1 through 5. How that Paul remembered the unfeigned faith that was in Timothy, which dwelt first in his grandmother Lois and in his mother Eunice. Hannah was like this. You see, Eunice succeeded for about four reasons. And Hannah was the same type person in teaching Samuel. First place, she placed in her son the unfeigned faith that she had. Second, she began to teach him when he was a child. 2 Timothy 3:13. Third, she taught him the scriptures. And fourth, she allowed nothing to hinder her from training her child in the way she should go, even a husband who was not of her faith, as we'll learn later. Hannah was that type person. You find that Samuel was one of the greatest judges that Israel ever had. Now, he failed as a father. I say he failed, at least he was part responsible, and one of the reasons may have been the very thing we was talking about a moment ago. If you go over to chapter 7, you'll find that he judged in a circuit about several cities. He went from year to year and finally came back to Ramah. In other words, Samuel may have been too busy going from place to place to be a father to his sons. And as a result, they walked in bribes and corruption and were not as their father was. But nevertheless, no doubt Samuel was trained well by this mother. Not only that, she was a lovable person. You find that in this case, it says that Elkanah loved her. Didn't mean that he didn't love Peninnah, but no doubt he loved Hannah more than he loved Peninnah. And of course, you can see also that back in the Old Testament, God permitted sometimes that they'd have more than one wife, but when they did, there was always problems. And so we learn that even though she was in bitterness of soul, when she prayed, out of the bitterness of her soul, she prayed, but she didn't have a bitter attitude. You see, my friends, our trials can help us be better people if we'll let them. In James 1 and verse 1, verse 2 beginning, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations, diverse trials, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have a perfect work, that it may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. Did James mean we ought to rejoice and be happy that trials come into our life? No. But we ought to rejoice because of what the trials and tribulations can do for us. They can help us to be more patient, compassionate, understanding people if we'll let them. In Jackson, Tennessee, there's a young lady who's 47 years of age. She's been an iron lung since she's 3 and a half. She had polio. When that trial came into the life of this family, they could have turned against God, but that's one of the most lovable, compassionate families you'll ever meet. She finished high school, 1 year of college, knows more about the Bible than many preachers do. She's still living, and all sticks out her head. What I'm saying is that our trials can make us better people if we'll let them. That's the kind of person they made Hannah. And mothers many times have many trials that they go through. Let your trials help you to be a more lovable person. Not only that, but we find also that Hannah was a gentlewoman. Here she was, she had come to God in prayer. You find that she was of such anguish of soul that her voice was not heard. There she was praying before God, and there's Eli sitting over there watching her. He sees her lips moving, but he doesn't hear any words, and so he concludes she's drunk. And she said, well, he asked her the question. Now just think what she could have said. She could have said, you old goat, you've got two sons. You're a fine one to accuse somebody of being drunk, aren't you? But she didn't do that. She said, no, my Lord, I'm a woman of a sorrowful spirit. Look how gentle and kind, respectful she was. Because this was the nature of this type of person. Not only that, we find also she's a thoughtful woman. She didn't say that something had to be done and then go off on a tangent, but it's obvious she had thought about it. She had thought about the fact she wanted a child. She wanted a son. She went to God in prayer about it. In fact, if you'll observe, in about verse 16, count not thine handmaid for daughter of Belial, for out of the abundance of my complaint. That word in the Hebrew carries with the thought, my meditation. Out of the abundance of my meditation and grief, I've offered this prayer. In other words, I've thought about it. I'm praying about it. She had meditated on it. And so we find from Hannah that a thoughtful mother is one who thinks about things. She thinks them through. And many times you'll find that women think things through more than men do, don't they? So she was a good mother from this standpoint. That was a great characteristic. Not only that, but she was a prayerful woman. She had a problem. And I appreciate the lesson this morning when it's talking about prayers, that we'll go to God when we have problems. She had a problem. And you know, my friends, one of the great blessings from the Psalms is that they are so truthful. That's one of the things you learn from the Psalms. They're so truthful. They revealed every emotion that men have. Did you ever stop to think in Psalm 73 when David came before God and said, God, I've got a problem. You know what the problem is? I'm envious of the wicked when I see their prosperity. Now he's talking to God. But isn't there something wrong with envy and envious sin? Oh, yes. But David said, God, I've got a problem. I've got a problem with envy. Here I see the wicked and they're prospering, doing well. And here I am trying to do thy will. I'm trying to serve you and do right. And I was faced with this problem. I've got a problem with that. So we went to God in prayer. And he said, I didn't understand until one of the house of God and saw their end. He saw, as someone said, that all accounts are not settled in October. In other words, all accounts are not settled in this life. And then you find that that chapter ends with David rejoicing the Lord. He had a problem. He told God about the problem. What do you tell him about? Suppose David had said he'd gone to God in prayer and he had this envious problem, but he didn't admit it. God knows it anyway. So I don't want to be honest with God. All right, Hannah had a problem. She went to God in prayer with that problem because she believed in the power of prayer. And in the reading I gave a moment ago about Kipling, if I were damned body and soul, I knew his prayers would make me whole. How many young people have been brought back by the prayer of a mother? Hannah was that type of person. James said in James 5:16, the effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. And then he gives Elijah as an example of the power of prayer. And may I suggest to you, that's in the context of the sick, praying for the sick. And in the providence of God, through his natural laws, God can still work and take care of the sick if he desire without performing a miracle. Hannah was a prayerful woman. Not only that, she recognized the importance of self-denial. Look at her. How many women could pray this prayer today? She didn't have a child. Just think how much she wanted a child. And maybe in those days, it was even more important than it is today sometimes. For a Jewish woman not to be able to bear a child was very disgraceful. She wanted a child more than anything. And yet she recognized that sometimes to get what you want, you have to deny yourself. So she vowed a vow. She said, God, if you'll give me a child, I'll lend him to you all the days of his life. Now, how many could pray that prayer? That's the type of mother she was. And of course, the thing about it is that many mothers may not lend their child to the Lord in that sense. But think of the self-denial that many mothers go through. For example, they deny themselves of maybe a new dress because the children need a dress, or the girl. Or maybe they deny themselves of nights of sleep because the child's sick. One characteristic of a mother's love is it practices self-denial. Hannah was that type of woman. She was willing to deny herself in this case. Then she was a woman of great faith. As I mentioned a moment ago, we find in this particular case, her faith is seen in this. Now I want us to learn something here. She asked God for a child. Now look at the reading again that I called your attention a moment ago. She said, "No, my Lord, I'm not drunk. I'm a woman of a sorrowful spirit." Then Eli answered and said, "Go in peace, and the God of Israel grant thee thy petition that thou hast asked of him." And she said, "Let thine handmaid find grace in thy sight." Now notice, so the woman went her way and did eat, and her countenance was no more sad. Back in verse 7, this woman wouldn't eat. Her countenance was sad. She's gone to God with her problem. She's presented her problem to God. She's expressed what she wants. Now she's left it in the hands of God. She goes to eat. Her countenance is no more sad. She's happy. That's great faith that God will do what, keep the promise. You know, sometimes many of us are like the, I read about the man that's going down the road in the wagon. There's an Irish fellow walking along with a bag of potatoes on his back. So the fellow stopped and said, "You want to ride?" He said, "Yes." So he got up and still had the bag of potatoes on his back. One little ways, and the man said to him, "You want to let your potatoes ride too?" He said, "Oh, I didn't know you wanted my potatoes to ride too." Now my point is this. Sometimes we take our problems to God, yet we bring them back with us. When we take them to God, just leave them there, because we've done everything we can do, and then we have to put them with God to take care of the rest of it. That's what Hannah did. "I've done all I can do. I've talked to God about it. I presented my problem to God. Eli said, may God grant your prayer to you." And now she eats, her countenance no more sad. She left it in the hands of God. I know that's easier said than practiced, but my friends, when you get right down to it, that's the way it is. When we've done all we can do, and prayer, we go to God in prayer about it, then leave it there. If it be God's will, he'll say yes, no, or wait a while. One or the other. That's the kind of woman Hannah was. Not only that, she lived in a house of great turmoil. Notice her adversary, which was Peninnah, was always, no doubt, to saying, "I've got children, you can't have children." She was provoking her to anger, making her fret. And so, yet in the midst of all this, she still maintained a good attitude. You know, sometimes the very people we ought to help are the people that are provoked the most. I wrote this thought down when I was looking at this. Eli didn't know all the facts, so he drew a long conclusion. Let me suggest to you, my friends, that we learn a great lesson here, that things are not always what you see them to be. Now, he saw this woman. He saw her praying. But from without knowing all the facts and from what he thought he saw a drunk woman, but she wasn't drunk at all. So my point is, always be sure you have all the facts before you draw a conclusion. There may be some things you don't know. You remember Jesus said, judge not that you be not judged, for with judgment you shall be judged. What measure meet, it shall be measured you again. Why behold thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, and considerest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Or how shall I say to thy brother, let me pull out the mote out of thine eye? Hold, a beam is in thine own eye. Thou hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of thine own eye, and then thou shalt see clearly to cast the mote out of thy brother's eye. Now, he's not condemning all judging, because there are many verses that tell us we are to judge righteous judgment. But he's talking about judging the motives of people. For example, you've ever heard people say, I know what they did, and I'll tell you why they did it. No, my friends, only God can know why somebody does something unless they tell you. When you and I get into the motive judgment business, we're in God's business. Maybe you meet a friend on the street, you've been good friends, and you speak to them and they don't say anything. You say, well, I guess they think they're better than I am today. But maybe they've just left the funeral home or a hospital or a friend's at point of death. You've judged their motives. So that's what Eli was doing. He thought he saw a drunk woman, but he didn't know the motives behind all she did. Always be sure, you see, when people are down, that's most of the time when they need the greatest help. So be sure you have all the facts. Hannah was a type woman that was a good woman. Then she was a woman in interesting having a child so that she could glorify God. What is the Lord's motive? Sometimes you find women, I'm thankful there aren't too many, that want children to make their marriage better. It doesn't work that way. Don't have children to make your marriage better. Second, sometimes you'll have women that want children for the prominence of it. We live in an age when there are women that want children for income tax purposes. There are other women that want children for greater, more government checks. I know that to be a fact. Well, those are wrong motives. She wanted a child that could be used to the glory of God. And finally, in this particular case, she was a woman that kept her word. Now just think about that. We don't know how old Samuel was when he was weaned. Some think it were from 3 months to 6 months to a year. Some think even up as high as 8 years. But be that as it may, whenever she weaned him, she didn't go up to the temple until he got old enough to be weaned, and then she went to the temple. She took Samuel back, presented to Eli, because she had vowed a vow to the Lord, if you'll give me a son, I'll lend him to the Lord. She was a woman that kept her word. And every mother, and every father too, but every mother, when you tell your children something, you give your word on something, always keep your word. This, of course, is true of fathers and mothers. When you tell your children something, I tell preachers. If you tell your son or your daughter, I'll take you fishing this afternoon, or I'll do this or that, you try to do it. You say, but emergencies come up. But if too many emergencies come up, it won't be long, and the children say, I don't believe what you're saying anyway. Try to keep your word when you say something. Motherhood is one of the greatest callings there is. And Hannah was an example of a good mother. May God bless you to be a better mother and use Hannah as an example to do so.